The Spinoff Podcast Network.
Are you making the most of your KiwiSaver investment? Generate is an award-winning KiwiSaver provider with a track record of strong long-term performance. Making a smart decision now could add tens of thousands of dollars by the time you reach retirement. Book a no-obligation chat with a Generate KiwiSaver advisor today at generatekiwisaver.co.nz/getadvice. A copy of the product disclosure statement is available at generatekiwisaver.co.nz. The issuer of the scheme is Generate Investment Management Limited, and of course, past performance does not guarantee future returns.
Ready to rediscover the joys of cycling? With over 300 kilometres of cycle paths across Tāmaki Makaurau, jumping on your bike and going for a ride is such a fun way to discover the city from a different perspective. Cycling is getting more and more popular across Auckland, so now's a great time to join the hype and give cycling a go. Head to at.govt/cycling to find your nearest cycleway today.
All right, you're with another episode of The Offspin. My name's Alex Bray. I'm already tired. Over there pouring a beer is Simon Day. How are you?
Courtesy of the beer spot. I am very well.
Very well.
I had a wonderful long weekend doing not much other than watching cricket.
Yeah, same. And I suppose, it was a warm-up game in some ways for the Black Caps themselves as they look towards the World Test Championship final. And it was a warm-up game for us in the watching public too, as we look ahead to bigger challenges. So how'd you pull up? Were you comfortable with your performance levels over the course of this test?
I reckon I watched about 25% of the game live, which I'm not, celebrating, nor am I embarrassed about. It was...
Is that sort of 4 days up to midnight each day?
2 o'clock on the first day.
That's quite good.
Hung about to see Conway get his 100. Mm-hmm. That meant a relatively early bedtime on day two. I didn't see the double 100. I think it was about midnight I went to bed. And then caught some after Teak's concert on Saturday. And then a little bit on a second screen then we lost a day. So it's all getting confused already.
It is. And like honestly, the day that we lost, it was the one that I was really targeting for a big shift, And that was difficult, having put a lot of preparation into being at peak performance for that particular moment of the match.
But it really is the worst possible timing, right?
It's so bad. It's really bad.
Which is a kind of a challenge. But I loved seeing on Twitter the photos of people's sort of night watching setups. People building like lounge beds and really settling in for sort of bit of sleep, bit of watching all at the same time. I didn't quite have that dedication, but a little bit on the phone as I drifted off.
Look, it's fair to say that it might have been a bit easier to get through this game if the game itself was a bit more exciting, perhaps. Now, I think we disagree on this a little bit, but I kind of thought that it was not very good Test cricket.
I thought it was considered. Test cricket at its best. It was Test cricket as Test cricket should be. I think we've been oversaturated with thrilling, sort of final session day five.
Yes.
Results happening in really sort of unexpected ways. Ben Stokes, Rishabh Pant, New Zealand bowling out Pakistan. But this is what Test cricket was all about. New Zealand... we lost a day, and then New Zealand did a really ambitious declaration, and England couldn't get the new ball away initially, and Sibley was really slow, so they chose to play out a draw.
I mean, that's all true, and you're absolutely right that this is a much more kind of standard form of Test cricket. But I just remember having this feeling at about 2:30 a.m. on day four, and thinking, do I actually enjoy this? Like, do I like doing this? Is this fun? And I do worry that that without some sort of really spectacular sort of event taking place in either the next game or the final, it's going to get a bit punishing.
The Offspin will become a Phoenix podcast. Maybe you know, you were meant to be at a nightclub rather than watching Test cricket at 2:30 in the morning, and maybe that's what distorted your perspective. But, you know, we saw
people who know me would know that nightclubs are where I frequently am at 2:30 in the morning.
Smoking a rolly on the deck, maybe. I don't know. But we had a double 100 on debut. We had Tim Southey swinging the ball all over the show to take 6 wickets. You know, never complain about watching Broad and Anderson bowl in tandem. We had a really strong debut with bat and ball from England's Robinson, which was perhaps overshadowed by some really ugly tweets, which is a conversation in itself. Do you think the Sun held that story to drop on the day of his debut?
I think there's a reasonable chance, yeah. I mean, if it was before he made his debut, then it just wouldn't have had as much impact. And if they waited to hold it for a while longer, I mean, all of that was in the public domain. They were all on his account. There's every chance that someone else would have ran it instead. I mean,
It feels really manipulative and ugly, like, but it also, you know.
Yeah, and I don't think anything should take away from the fact that, like, they weren't just bad tweets. They were really pretty horrific things to say.
No, I often think about whether, you know, the mistakes I've made as a 16 to 25-year-old, and then I looked at them and I was like, that's not something I can ever say I sort of even thought about.
No, absolutely not. And yeah, similarly, you know, like we both are as cricketers, we are both, you know, imperfect people, as it were. But yeah, the fact that I do feel a little bit uneasy about the suspension now. I mean, it's not like he did that when he was a professional cricketer. It's not like English cricket has particularly clean hands when it comes to racism within the game. And I do sort of wonder if there's an element of, you know, this guy has fucked up in a way that we can pin something on him, therefore we're going to pin something on him because we can, as opposed to addressing these much more difficult and much more systemic issues that run through the game.
Social media is good for no one, eh?
Nah.
Although it makes people accountable because he needs to be held accountable for some pretty fucked up views that he might have held in the past and might hold now.
This wasn't even on our run sheet, actually, but it's just quite topical, I suppose. But what is actually on our run sheet? Is it time for New Zealand to drop some players? Do they need to wield the axe?
The lads' WhatsApp is talking about whether we drop Watling and Ross Taylor, two of New Zealand's greatest cricketers, two games out or one game out from the World Test Championship. They're both underperforming with the bat. There are young players who have had a good record over the last 12 months waiting in England. Is that in the spirit of cricket? Could you do that to people who have given so much to the sport for their country for such a long time?
Yeah, I mean, yes, but I don't know if it'll actually be the right decision for the team at this stage. I mean, Will Young is definitely one of those players who could and perhaps should come into the 11, but you know, in terms of the other New Zealand cricketers who are over there at the moment, I mean, I was just reading this morning that Finn Allen has just picked up a T20 contract, and so he'll be in England when the series is on, so theoretically could come in, but that's never, ever, ever going to happen.
But it's Tom Blundell. Blundell, I can never remember who's the wicketkeeper in waiting.
Yeah, Tom. He's probably not going to get Watling's spot, though, I'd say, because there's already quite a bit of attacking sort of batting around that part of the order.
But he's going to get the spot.
Eventually.
Well, not eventually, two games from now.
Yeah. I don't know, I'd keep Watling in, even though his that missed stumping of Santner was pretty ugly.
I reckon stumpings must be one of the hardest things to do.
Yeah, and if you were a New Zealand wicketkeeper, you'd never learn how to keep against spinners. Just wouldn't happen.
And you're not expecting Mitchell Santner to beat the bat.
Yeah, absolutely not. I think in some ways the more interesting question for them to ponder is who is the bowling attack? Because, I mean, I'm not sure if you were watching at the time, but Trent Bolt made a very dramatic and extremely unsubtle appearance halfway through the test where he would just start walking around the boundary, you know, and just remind everyone, oh, he was just off to the nets or something like that. But he was just reminding everyone that he was still there. And then there was a bit of commentary from the coach, Gary Stead, that he was now in line to play if selected for the second test, which originally wasn't going to be the case. Someone has to go for that to happen if he's going to get picked.
So what I would do, Trent Bolt is going to be picked for the final.
Mm.
What I would do is I would have one less batsman. I would have Kyle Jameson's genuine all-rounder, Tim Southee.
No.
Borderline all-rounder. Neil Wagner, genuine all-rounder.
Yeah, Neil Wagner did play like one of the greatest
some of those,
test batsmen
some
of all
of
time.
Some of those clips off his legs.
Yeah. Though, I mean.
So I'd have four fast bowlers and Ajaz Patel at Southampton. Yeah. And would that mean Kyle Jameson has to bat at seven?
No, you could have a yes. Actually, yes. Yeah. If you're not playing to Grant home.
No, because that would make 12.
Yeah, true. Yeah. I don't know, though. I mean, I sort of wondered if maybe Wagner should be the one that should go. I mean, the way they were actually playing him.
That's almost as bad as, you know, given the service.
It's a terrible thing to say, I know.
Provided New Zealand cricket to make us number one in the world, that would be as bad, in my mind, as dropping Ross Taylor or BJ Watling.
No, I totally agree. It would be horrendously disloyal. It would be, a real heel turn, as it were. But at the same time, the way that Wagner was actually being used, he was playing as a pitch it up swing bowler in this particular game. He wasn't doing the whole smash it in, try and bounce people out stuff. He looked pretty good as a swing bowler, but we've got a lot of them.
It's really exciting that Kyle Jameson is like Glenn McGrath, who can also swing it. But no, I couldn't do that to Neil Wagner, who basically put us in this position.
He did. But maybe it's a horses for courses thing.
And I
maybe
just don't think Colin
de Grandhomme is a
deserves
stallion,
to
you know?
have that spot over Neil Wagner.
Yeah,
and it was a soft pitch, and the ball went soft, and
yeah. I guess you wouldn't have got anything out of smashing it in and hoping that, you know, someone fends it away. The other bowler that we've been keeping our eye on over this series, and in fact over the whole run of this podcast, Simon Dhull.
It was exciting to see Simon Dhull back as part of the commentary team because my distaste for him is, you know, it brings me so much more sort of entertainment while watching the cricket. I thought the commentary team that they put together over the summer was really, really strong did a really great job. I kind of liked them all.
Kind of missing that asshole factor.
Yeah, and it was great to see Dhull back. He, he was the first person I saw on day one, you know, in the lead up to the toss with his terrible jewellery. He's got like a really high gold chain.
Oh, no.
I think Simon Dhull looks a little bit like a really low-level gangster.
Oh, no. Like,
or a bad drum and bass DJ.
Wow.
Mm.
Wow.
So he'll be really at home in London. but
he did put in a remarkable bit of chat when, you know, the topic was crap opening batsman for New Zealand, basically. And he talked about how he had never had a good opening batsman and so always had to finish the innings of bowling and then be back out there way too quickly. And he talked about Mark Richardson and said, you know, all of the bowlers absolutely loved him for his batting, how he would just stick around, never give his wicket away cheaply. And then said, you know, they didn't like him for anything else, basically, which is probably true.
I always thought Dool and Rigger would get along really well, sort of on a ideological, yeah. Intellectual sort of.
I think it's like
parallel.
when you put two magnets together or something, and they just kind of push each other apart.
Flip them around and they stick together.
That is pretty much all we've got on our run sheet.
But
for
on
this
the commentary,
episode.
Though, I also wanted to talk about David Bumble Lloyd.
Oh, yeah.
He has been one of the loudest voices on this test match being sort of very boring and mediocre. He described it as one of the worst test matches he's ever seen, and he's seen a lot, is what his tweet said. But I worry about Bumble. I think he's in a really bad state of mind.
Really?
He came into the box on day one, and someone said, you know, how are you, Bumble? Welcome into the commentary team. He said, I'm decidedly average.
Oh my God.
He's just not feeling it at the moment. So I think rather than being critical of the match, Bumble needs to reflect inwardly about how he's feeling in his own state of mind.
That's such an interesting thing. I mean, have you noticed with broadcasting how no matter what state a broadcaster is in, who they're interviewing, no matter what the circumstances, like you hear it all the time on Morning Report where they'll introduce their guest and then the guest will say, you know, thanks for having me, how are you? And it'll always be, I'm very well, thank you. You know, it's not even like a question so much as like a ritual. And so for someone to come into a cricket commentary broadcast and say that things aren't going so well, that really is a cry for help.
Because it's kind of your as a broadcaster, it's your job to be peppy, to uplift the environment. It's like just at the beginning of this episode, Alex had to re-record his intro because
it was such a bad intro the first time around.
It was a real Monday morning, although it's Tuesday, but Tuesday after a long weekend, he wasn't vibing. He was down.
I needed to hit the bear spot before getting in here, I think.
Shout out to the Beer Spot, 5 locations across Auckland with over 40 New Zealand beers on tap, including this delicious Kereru Lager that I'm drinking right now.
Oh, yeah. So, we really need to get out of the studio because we've got a meeting for our actual jobs that we need to get to. Simon will be saying a karakia at the start of it, so he needs to get ready. But we do want to hear from you about how you're going with the series so far, how your performance as a cricket watcher is faring against your expectations. Are you in form? Are you, you know, perhaps a little bit rusty from not having to do an overnighter in a while?
And the 11 you'd pick for the final.
Oh, yeah, go on. Why not? Yeah, chuck it to us. We can be reached. If you just send it to the bulletin email, that's just thebulletin@thespinoff.co.nz. I'll see it there. And we're going to be back next week after the second test. Maybe Tuesday or Wednesday or something. I'm not quite sure yet. Anyway, thank you.
Are the Phoenix playing at Eden Park anytime soon?
No, they've had their one game a year. That's all we're getting. Thank you to Tina. Thank you to the Beer Spot. Thank you to Spinoff members.
Thank you to Test Cricket. Beautiful, beautiful game. Far better than football. Thank you to Samuel Flynn Scott. Ka kite.
Talo for Lover. I'm Madeline Chapman, editor at The Spinoff. If you have the means, consider supporting our high-quality journalism by becoming a Spinoff member. Sign up now at thespinoff.co.nz/donate.
Kia ora e te iwi. Te Aihe Butler here, podcast manager at The Spinoff. If you enjoy listening to our podcasts, consider supporting our mahi by signing up to become a Spinoff member at thespinoff.co.nz/donate.
The Spinoff Podcast Network.